listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
And Mike the Ghoul here, gonna talk some real life kind of stuff, maybe?
Yes, as Asteroid G goes deep on true crime. We're here to solve murders and actually not murders, because the two that we're gonna be discussing now are not murder shows. Even though Netflix basically made an entire, like, genre adapting podcast ideas into miniseries ideas and then doing a whole, like, true crime genre all about murders and stuff, but I think they kind of switched gears when Tiger King came out and no one really died. At least, I don't think anyone died in that. I haven't watched it, because, ew.
There was a couple deaths in there that were accidental. I was wrapped into watching that because, you know, it was pandemic, and my wife's friend was like, hey, you guys got to check this out. It's Tiger King. It's real good. I'm like, okay, I'll watch it. It was fine, but I hear what you're saying. That was kind of where the captivation of the target audience now being, like, you know, the people that want to breeze through these 3-4 episode documentaries about, like, not necessarily murder, but, like, you know, people's lives who kind of suck, and we can watch there and judge them, which is fun.
So let's talk about that through format. You had me watch, because I don't watch these normally, because I don't even care about documentaries. Like, I'll buy DVDs that have all the special features, like, ooh, special edition, I want that, and then the special features sit on the side for someone else to watch while I just watch the movie.
fair.
Mostly what I want is the best transfer of the movie I can get. Sometimes it's like, and if, like, sometimes the special editions have multiple cuts. So, like, I want the different cuts so I can compare cuts. Like, I bought the super box set of Dawn of the Dead from the 70s, and there's like 3 different cuts on that. I'm like, I don't care about the special features. This is the special feature. But I don't watch documentaries. So you got me to watch Dance with the Devil, which is about TikTok dancers who get sucked into a cult, which,
yeah,
I'm going to be honest with you, sounds like fiction. Like, it's a,
it's so funny, right?
It's the kind of thing where I'm sitting there going, this is the start of a movie, right? And watching it, the first 15 minutes or so feels surreal. Like, everyone's kind of, because they're dramatizing a bunch of stuff to make up for lack of footage from not recording it at the time. So a lot of it sounds fake and artificial because the people doing the dramatizations are the real people, and they're not actors.
No, it's funny, too, because, like you said, it sounds fake. Like, a dance cult of people that have excommunicated their families and now live in a compound with some religious leader. Like, it's like the story of a bad movie. But, like, it's
very,
it's 100% true. It's, like, the weirdest thing in the world.
But the thing is, what struck me most of all watching this thing is that clearly it was designed for 3 episodes as a miniseries for Netflix to say they got, like, multiple views off of it. They want to get their view rating. But watching it, there's really only enough story for about an episode and a half.
Yeah, there's a lot of drawn out, a lot of flashback, lot of, you know, home video and all that kind of thing. They really kind of stretch this out. And, like, I don't know if anybody listening to this has actually seen this. It's a good watch. It's fine. But this is what Netflix does with this stupid formula. Like, they draw you in this, like, you know, what seems to be a compelling story that, like, this has to be made up. I want to see how this ends. And then they don't deliver you an ending.
I want to touch upon all that. The thing is broken into 3 episodes. So the first episode focuses on the dancers. We get the story of a sister who's her younger sister, although everyone calls them twins because they're, what, within like a year of each other and they look alike. Something like that. The one sister and moves to L.A. Her older sister moves out to be with her because they both want to be dancers. Right. I think the younger one makes it onto So You Think You Can Dance, at least for like the opening rounds. This was also irritating. They didn't give us enough of any of the story beats that were actual history for the characters for me to follow their life progression. So they use footage cut from So You Think You Can Dance to show she was trying to make it as a dancer. But then we don't know how far she got in the competition to know whether or not this was a big break for her or not. And I'm like, that's irritating.
My wife dragged me into So You Think You Can Dance back in the day, too. Yeah. So this kind of hit home with her. So, and I remember watching auditions like this and how they work. When they give you that, like, little gold ticket or whatever she had in there, like, they move you on to the next round. It's like a big group round, and then they cut people down from there. My assumption is she got cut in that group round because, like you said, you don't see anything else happen.
They don't look like they're professionally trained. They have a dance studio, but, again, not getting enough history about these two. We don't know how deeply involved the parents were in their dance training. They just say, we let the girls do whatever they want, but that's not you could have been dance parents, and that would actually influence a lot of the story that we don't see.
Sure would. And yeah. I don't think they were. They keep, you know, the parents always say, we were supportive, we loved them. And then one sister was like, yeah.
They
like, we just
that.
Wanted to be part of a family again. But, like, yeah. you know, that's what people say that aren't that kind
yeah.
of parent.
It's like when they're like, we're not a cult. But isn't that what a cult would say? Like,
exactly, right?
Yeah, we're not dance parents. We're not like that. But isn't that what every dance parent says? So,
sure.
we don't know what exactly their upbringing was, because I watched So You Think You Can Dance, because I did dance way back in the day before I got bored with it. Like, I appreciated the good dancers that were on that show, but I also recognized that more often than not, if you were primarily hip-hop dancers, which is what these two girls looked like they were, you had a much harder battle getting right in. You didn't get to go onto the next stage where you got to, like, learn choreography and compete in the groups there. You had to then, you're like, even if she got the ticket, there's may have been extra like auditioning she had to do. I know a lot of hip hop dancers didn't even get the ticket and had to go through a big group dance before they moved on. There's a lot of steps to the process. And like when you're talking like 100 or so people that go in and only 12 make it to the show, more than likely she didn't get past that stage. You're right. But again, we don't fucking know that because the show doesn't fucking tell us.
They give us just enough history to let us fill in the blanks ourselves sort with of. A educated guess, kind sort of, I'd
yeah.
say. But like you said, like you don't get enough context on the way things were. We can assume things. The thing comes off as these are the caring parents.
Yeah.
It comes off as like this was her first big break because then she got the phone call or the text message from this other guy who was a TikToker and you know whatnot. So yeah,
but
I guess. But we don't know.
No, there's a lot of research that really should have been done on the family and a lot of history that should have been shown to us that isn't. Because, like, just as an example, if she got on the show and then was cut early, did it depress her? Did that give her, like, the other guys an opening to come in and give her the support she needed through a religious cult?
Exactly.
That would then, yeah, like, there's so much background we're missing. So we don't know. It's just perspective from the family without any other research being done, which makes the documentary very one-sided. Now, don't get me wrong, the cult leader, very clearly a cult leader, and he's a shithead of, like, multiple magnitudes, but more exploration on all sides to make the story feel less one-sided would have been appreciated.
Yeah, this guy is, like, you know, a real dumpster fire of a human being. You know, would basically, like, as you get more into it, you see, like, you know, we drew you in with this, like, appearance of these beautiful girls and, like, a TikTok cult, and then we're going to take you on a journey of how this guy just, like, ruined people's lives from 40 years ago and bring them into it here. And the story kind of went from the sisters to what he did in the past and the vengeance against him, which is fine.
Which is fine.
But you built me up with this one part of the story, which I was kind of into. I want to see this family get back together. Just show me the happy ending. Let's go. And we don't get that. And we get maybe the vendetta against this guy, but then we don't really get the results of that either. But it was...
Yeah.
Is it a fine watch? It's a fine watch.
It's
but
fine.
I wish they'd give me an answer. And that's my problem.
With well, that is, I think, part of the problem is this crew clearly found the story in, like, 2022. And so they spent a year with this family, and then as they dug in with this family after they did their TikTok video saying, hey, want to let you know, my sister's been sucked into a cult, that's why these things are happening, and that got the buzz, the documentary people showed up, they decided to pay the family to do this, they dramatized a bunch of stuff, they did research, and as they were digging on the family, they found out more about the cult leader, and so that became a whole big thing, and there was a lot going on there, that's fine. Digging into him and getting more of the background of how he set up this Korean church, because he's Korean in a Korean community, and it kind of grew and became more, and then, not to generalize, but like a lot of mega church pastors who get a taste of the good life, he suddenly decided to start making it all about the money and the power, and it's very clear he's a shitty dude. So...
Yeah. Not a good guy at all.
Not a good guy at all. But that's if you're right. They suck you in with the TikTok dancers, and after that first episode, they then pretty much cast them aside, except for little snippets throughout the other two, to focus on this other story. And then the third episode is so much regurgitation of what we saw the first two episodes, with maybe four or five good scenes, and it's just padding leading up to a not ending, because none of the court cases against him have even been brought, really, and the civil trials against him aren't even going out for another year, and this came out early this year. So, like, you don't have a story. You should have sat on this for another couple of years to give us some answers.
I feel like, you know, we're going to be seeing part two in a year or two come out for this, and maybe the documentary looks much different, but it's just,
it'll be padded.
I didn't realize it upon the first watch. I just thought, like, oh, this is pretty good, this is fine, it's an interesting thing, like, check it out, it was kind of neat. But the, like you said, on the second watch of it again, I was like, wow, they really just give you two stories that are not complete in a really truncated three episode like doggy bag that doesn't give you the payoff that you would hope. You don't get any answers for the family. You don't get any answers for the sister. You don't get any answers for the court case. You don't get any answers for the other pair of sisters that come out of nowhere. Like, it's a lot of just not payoff for what had the, like, the hooks of being good.
And then the other thing I love is that they spent so long on the hip-hop dancers. And then at the closing montage, they do, like, text about various people in the documentary and what's going on with them. And they don't give us any text for any of the hip-hop dancers.
Yeah, nothing.
Like, nothing. I can't even think of what their real name, even though they were flashed on there a few times, I can't think what their real names were. I don't know. Like, they have a dance, some of them have dance crews, but have those dance crews been successful? We don't have anything. Yeah. And it's just like, this is half a story that you gave us. Maybe you're right, in 2 years we'll get the second half of a season. But this is three episodes that barely contain a story.
Yeah, when I flip around Netflix sometimes, I see these docudramas, and I look for ones that are that nice little 3-4 bite-sized episodes. Like, kind of, I can digest them in a night if I really like it.
Sure.
This felt like the ones that could have been like an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, just those movie ones, you know?
Yeah.
This didn't need to be three episodes of whatever this was.
No, yeah, I think you need to restructure it, focus first in the 90s, leading up to, because that's when the church originally founded, into the 2000s, into the 2010s, when the TikTok dancers, like, got sucked into his cult in the late 2010s, up to, like, the mid-2020s, where, like, the TikTok comes out, and the story breaks and everything. You build to that, you get the tie-in of the other characters that were first introduced, so it weaves better. And then you wait on it until we have a little more of an ending, and you make it a movie. You make it an hour, 45-minute movie, because that's about as much story as this thing in 3 hours actually had.
Yeah, I feel like this was 20 to 30-minute bite-sized nuggets that they drew out with, you know, dances and pretty pictures.
Like, and really bad ones, too. Like, I didn't mind. Sometimes I didn't mind the dancing. Some of the people they featured were good, but a lot of the stuff they featured of the cult sister, the younger cult sister from the dance crew, who gets sucked in, and then you see all of her TikToks that she's doing of dancing. She sucks. She's really bad. She's pretty, and she can at least hold the beat, but she's clearly being carried by the dudes around her, because, and like, when you're talking about, she was probably cut early. Oh, you can see she was cut early. She, her sister dancing with her is the only reason why she was noticeable. On her own, she's not that great.
And it's funny, too, because, like, I said to you before when we were getting ready to get set up, I watched a little bit of the first episode again, because I've seen this twice because my wife liked it, and I'm just trying to refamiliarize myself with it. And to your point, when they first meet the dancer who communicates with them, like, hey, let's do a collab together, and all three of them are in the video, the other sister is the better dancer.
Yes.
It's like, wow, I didn't notice that. She's more on beat than the one that joined the cult. Which is, like, I think, to your point, maybe hitting on that, like, vulnerable thing. That guy that's, like, preying on people. Like, hey, you're pretty. You got 3 million followers. I can make money off you, but you're vulnerable. You're volatile. Come on in here. I'll help take care of you. Let me grab the sister, get my hooks in the one that I can manipulate, is really how that feels.
And that goes to that same point of, like, we needed more backstory, because we didn't know what the other sister was up to at all. Ooh, she did a couple auditions with her sister, and people told us we shouldn't audition together. What people? Why? Yeah. Where were you going that was telling you this? Was this competitions? Was this just random dancers? Like, very generalized in their history. Because the first episode gives us, like, 8 years worth of story in a single episode for, like, multiple characters. The second episode is completely different characters, and it's a real slow burn. And then the last year is in the third episode, and it drags. So it's like rebalancing it and giving us more on these two sisters, so we understand, because we don't understand why she joined the cult beyond dude liked her, and then pastor said, hey, come join us. Like, that doesn't tell us her personality enough for us to understand why.
I think, like you just said, I think someone just grabbed her because she was maybe easy to manipulate. Yeah. She was vulnerable. Sure. The guy that contacted her was in this cult or in this religion. He said, hey, I want you to come with me to a service. And, you know, okay, sure, I'll come with you. And then the next thing you know, you're there and you're having dinner with the guy. And then he's like, hey, I got a spare bedroom. Oh, hey, you do this. Let me help you manage your finances. And it builds and builds and builds from there. And the next thing you know, you're in like a conservatorship that you're unaware of. It's the craziest thing ever.
Sure, but the thing is, you and I have made that case better than this documentary has.
That's, you know what? That's why we are here, talking here, and breaking it down, because, yeah. I mean, it was kind of shit.
A couple dudes on a low-grade podcast, though, should not be able to do better than the Netflix documentary about it. Like, it was bad editing, bad storytelling, with a lot of fluff.
This felt like four guys with a YouTube video channel that had Google and access to a car that would meet these people and prey off them. It doesn't feel like a complete story to me.
No, not at all. Not at all. And it's interesting to watch this because, you know, this came out of the whole big craze that Netflix is doing. They want more and more true crime. One, because it's easy to produce. And two, because people seem to flock to it. But this one doesn't make a good case for that format. Whereas Netflix, early in its whole true crime buzz, actually produced a parody of the very things that it's now hard in on with American Vandal. And I think that one makes a better case for storytelling and style than the actual material does.
It's funny, because you told me that, and we're going to talk about that one now a little bit. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And, like, I'm watching the preview today, because I watched two episodes. And I'm like, wow, this feels kind of this is an interesting story, but is this like fake? And then I realized what I was watching. I'm like, oh, this is actually really good.
Yeah, it's a parody of true crime about the first season is about a dude who gets framed, maybe. For spray painting dicks all over campus during a school event. And it's fucking hilarious. Like, the evidence against him is the fact that he used to draw the same kinds of dicks elsewhere, except he's like, yeah, but I drew the head different, and these are it's just so dumb, but so fucking funny. And it's like, it's eight compelling episodes of obviously fiction, but it's paced better because the people knew what kind of story beats they needed to hit and how they needed to hit it. It's fiction. This is not real. But in eight episodes, it tells a more tight and cohesive story than a real documentary of this nature did, which just shows you how little material the real thing had.
Yeah, and this was broken down, the Vandal one, into some really digestible parts. Like, they're about 33, 35 minutes an episode. Mm-hmm. And if you skip the intro, you're like 3 minutes in already. So it was really easy to digest. Could you have taken eight and crammed it into four episodes and made it longer? Yeah, but you did this correctly, I think, in the way you paced it out a little bit. There's a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of each episode that I've seen so far. The characters, I think, are funny as shit, and I'm into seeing where these people end up. Like, I was taking notes and stuff. Like, okay, ball hair on this one, no ball hair on these. And mushroom head here, line here, like trying to make sure, like, I'm following along my own little
investigation. So you can figure out who the villain is.
I'm like, isn't this dude Alex? I'm into this liar Trivoli over here. Is he the one? Like, you know, there's story going on here that I'm more invested in a hilariously, like, I mean, it's dicks on cars. How much funnier and crazy can you get? But I'm into this story.
It's so juvenile, but it's so good. And that's the thing. It's like, why is this more compelling than a real true crime documentary? It shows the limits of the format. Netflix said, we want 3 episodes. Because, you know, like, we see this in other things. Like, Star Wars, the new shows come out, and everyone's like, this should have been a movie. It didn't need to be stretched out to 8 episodes. Or, like, Marvel puts one out, and it's like, this 6 episodes should have just been a movie and with heavy rewriting before it got produced because this was awful. Like, it's weird to think that such a low-budget little thing could do better, but then corporate greed says a lot of that answer.
It's always about the dollar in the end, one way or another, and, you know, people are drawn into that. I think South Park hit it on the head when they, you know, did the episode with Stan's father and mother watching, and they called it investigative murder porn. Like, that's what it is. Like, people love to watch and sit there and, like, you know, dissect what they're seeing, try to solve the case on their own. Like, it gives you a bit of a rush, I think, as an adult in your later on life, like watching something like, oh, this is tragic, can I figure it out, kind of thing. And, and sometimes you get a payoff and it's good, and sometimes you get a TikTok one that's not that good.
It was funny. It was just, Like, and to think that it's about TikTok. Don't get me wrong. I understand with social media, you know, TikTok's huge, blah, blah, blah. I'm not being, a boomer millennial here. It's more the idea of, like, that the best footage they had and the best story they could tell was about TikTokers in a cult. And, like, I get that that's where the hook came from, but at the same time, this feels very D-list on the level of stories.
It was like they wanted to tell a story about a Korean man who enslaved people in a church, and like, nah, we need something a little bit more than that. Oh, my story about someone doing slavery, forced labor, and raping people in his church is not good enough. Let me throw some pretty faces in there. How's that? Netflix is like, stamp it. Let's go. Approve.
I mean, that was the hook that got people interested originally. But it's also the fact of, like, as we see in a quick 1 second shot, but no explanation, she's not, like, the older sister who's not in the cult isn't even really a true TikToker anymore. She has, like, what, platinum status on YouTube and something other stuff. Like, she has a career we know nothing about from this documentary. That's way more interesting to me. Like, the story about how her sister got sucked in, and then she managed to continue her life and build a career around this while trying to, like, figure out what's going on with her sister is far more interesting than the way the documentary crew presented it.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more on her. Like, had this clearly affected their relationship. Like, the little bits you get about the relationship of the sisters, it was there. They really loved each other. They care for each other. Was there a falling out there? Did something happen? Where did this happen? No, give me more of that dynamic, but we don't know.
Yeah, and it struggles again in the early part because there's so much artifice there. Like, yes, American Vandal is fake, but the characters there feel more real than the people performing their own dramatization in the documentary.
It's the slow shots in the dancing one for me. Like, the way the parent finishes a line, and then we're going to pause for 3 seconds, let the effect take in, show their faces. It feels like lazy camera work.
We
talked about lazy writing. Like, that feels like lazy camera work. When you have the idiots in the Vandal one, or just, like, they could be your buddies that you did this in high school kind of thing. It's so much more relatable than this, like, what feels like a privileged family.
Yes.
Who's upset about, you know, their daughter. And maybe there's a lot more there that, you know, we don't get to unpack because
we can't.
Don't know. We don't know.
We don't know. And that's, I think you said something that's interesting, that when my wife and I were watching it together and, like, she saw this. And that's specifically that this family seems very rich. Like, they're not, okay. Yes, the daughters stayed in a single bedroom together, but they were close to the same age. And then eventually they separate out into their own bedrooms. And they have their own dance studio with dance equipment and dance gear and everything in their house. And you go into the main room of their house, and even though you don't get perfect shots of it, the main room of their house is larger than the entirety of my house. And so you're sitting there going, okay, so she moves to L.A. Is she being supported by her family? Is she having to work on her own to support herself? We don't know. Seems like her family is loaded, like, every time. She goes and visits for Christmas, and, like, the tree is piled with more presents than I saw in my extended family, and they all have new matching flannel pajamas that they bought for the holiday and so forth. Most people don't have the money to do even that. So there's details that are hard to parse with the story they're telling. I feel like, yes, they're the TikTok family that broke the case, but there are more compelling families in the story that we barely see. And then, as Becky also pointed out after that, and it's like, so the girl decided she didn't want to be on her parents' teat anymore, and she went to L.A. and did her thing, found out it was hard, and repeatedly told her family she didn't want to come back. Bitch made her own choice. Her words.
I'm gonna expand on that a little bit because they made a point to say in the first episode, though, he was a counselor, I was a teacher or something. We didn't have a lot of money, but we made it work. But then you see him later on, like, they
loaded.
Maybe you didn't have money then, but you have money now.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, the matching pajamas, the white Christmas tree, the presents a mile high. Like, maybe you're doing this also because you want your daughter back and to show her the love or whatever. But maybe you're also compensating for the fact, like, you want her back in your life because was it your daughter that helped you get this money?
I mean, that's a thought.
You know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. And I want to just say, I don't know. I don't know this family. I'm throwing ideas out there.
That's the problem with dance parent stories is the... they very often, dance parents, acting parents, band parents, whatever, when you have a prodigy, and these parents clearly thought their kids were prodigies, and they were really good together, because the older sister was carrying the younger sister. Fucking carrying her. But fucking carrying her. But no. But like, when parents have a talented child or children, they will find ways to profit off of them, even if they don't think they are. Which, again, we barely see clips of the kids growing up and knowing, learning what their dance history was. We don't know from the documentary alone, and I'm sorry, if you're a documentary, you should be giving us all the information we need to be able to make a judgment. Mm-hmm. We don't know what their history was. We don't understand where anything came from. So it's hard for us to gauge anything about the story beyond the superficial.
It's very easy to side with the family here in this aspect. When you know more about the guy, when you know that who he is, the predator that this guy is, it's easy to side with the family. But we don't get enough of, did the family push her there a little bit? And I'm not, I just don't know. You know, it seems weird to me. Like, I don't know if, like, I could understand how somebody could be a part of something, have a family, things are great, but then disconnect themselves from it completely. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And yes, I guess it, I get that it happens. But it just doesn't seem like this was a part for this to happen without something coming from the relationship with the parents. It just seems weird.
Yeah, it does seem weird. And this speaks back to the structure. Like, I want more about this family and these details, because they're the first characters, I say, but people. They're the first characters we meet, and it's their story that's the hook to get us interested. These two girls, the TikTok life, the cult that comes because of the TikTok life, and suddenly one of the two sisters disappears. That's the hook. That's the story. Mm-hmm. But this story happened 20, 30 years starting up prior. And the second episode goes into that. If we got that story first, we'd probably care less about delving into the family that we meet, because we have this whole background for it. So it's the, like, I understand why they put the one family first, but the more compelling story that gets us deep into this mystery of this cult is what comes later, and so we're second guessing everything because we just don't understand any of it.
It's a strange choice of, like, you know, writing again. Like, why would you lead with something like this? Well, you should lead with who this person was and show where he ended up and show the story to get there. It was a reverse order of showing where we are, and then let me show you what led up to where we are now. But then let's not go back at the end and give you any resolution to where we've been.
Anything. Nothing.
You know? Yeah. The guy's a dirtbag. Like, he got that much out of it. Like, but that's about it.
Like, it's hard to accept up front that the parents' hands are clean. Until we know more about the cult leader, and we learn a lot about him in the second episode especially. So the judgment call can be made at that point. But I'm not saying the parents were bad or good. I'm not absolving them of anything that may have happened between them and their daughters in the past that we don't know about. What I am saying is they're clearly not the primary motivator of what led the girl into the cult, because the cult was led by a dude who is just a very charismatic dirtbag. He promised them what they wanted. He kind of sort of delivered, and that led them to think we should stick around with him. Fair enough, that's the prop, that's the story, that's the focus. But since the cult leader didn't want to participate in the documentary, the people still in the cult, including the sister, didn't want to participate in the documentary, and the only people we get is the superficial story from, like, all the people that did come out. We kind of learn more about the people in the past and their story, but still it feels light and superficial, and because of that the story feels limply one-sided.
And it's funny too, because, like, you're getting me to remember things from that second and third episode. Like, what was the dynamic between the one Korean lady and her father too? Like, there was this whole abandonment thing of the alcoholic mother
barely touched on,
and like, I wanted more of that. Like, you know, she's sitting with her dad, and her dad is, like, you know, obviously haggard and old, and, you know, has hated his life choices, and he goes to, like, apologize to the daughter, and she's like, "No, fuck you, I just brought you here to tell you I hate you," or whatever. I'm like, what did you have to get that on camera?
Yeah,
like,
what is the point of this
what does that add to the story here? Like, I don't get it.
You know what it added was a realization for me that when you get yelled at by a woman in Korean, man, that's rough. Okay,
what's, What's worse, being yelled at in Korean or being yelled at in German? I'm not sure.
I think it's Korean. She made that dude hurt.
Okay, all right. A woman in Korean, a man in German.
Yeah, both okay, that's fair.
Both are terrifying.
Woo!
But like,
respect.
I know. And like you said though, like there's too many variables of the story to give us a piece of a whole, and it's a whole bunch of like Swiss cheese, you know, story salad thrown into a bowl, and we can't really digest any of it. I got through two episodes of American Vandal, and what I saw was better conceptually than this documentary of real life people we should have feelings for. I care more about the little asshole Dylan drawing dicks than I do about this family.
Well, that was why I wanted you to watch American Vandal, was to see your thoughts on this in comparison to reality.
Yeah.
Because, like, the parody does it better.
It does. And, like I said, I didn't know it was a parody at first. Like, I mentioned it to my wife this morning.
That's why it works.
Exactly. And she's like, oh, I've heard of that. I'm going to check it out. And I ran out to get coffee and do an errand. And then I came back. And I'm like, hey, okay, we're going to watch that now? And she goes, well, I don't think it's for me. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, it's just dicks and fake. I'm like, what? Started watching the preview. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll watch this on my own. This is much more my humor. Don't worry about
but
it.
But it's and hilarious.
Like, it's so good, man. So like, good. The kid, like Dylan, is just like, you know, your every man's class clown little idiot that like, just, you know, did he take it too far kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
The little pranks they do, the baby farting, they walk up to a baby and farting on him thinking it's funny, you know, calling the paranoid old man prank calls, put him his electronics on the lawn. Like, they're doing shit that's like borderline, like really bad, but like still funny at the same time. It's a little bit more dark prank than humor, but like, it's still there. Like, you get what's going on. And then you see, because of everything this kid's done, why it's so easy to blame him. And I'm kind of excited to get through the next six episodes, and I hope there's a payoff, and I kind of hope he didn't do it, but like, I don't know. I'm not sure at this point.
Compelling. Yeah. Structure. And that's what's missing here, is if you don't have a clear ending for your documentary, which this one doesn't, because cult leader hasn't been arrested, civil charges haven't gone through yet. We don't even have a hearing on it until 2025. Yeah, I know, rough. But if you don't have a clear ending, then you need to build your story around, is the guy really a cult leader or not? And the problem is, it's pretty evident from like the first couple years he's running his church, he's already running a cult. So you have to develop your quote-unquote mystery in such a way that it keeps people hooked for three episodes, or, you know, only do a single fucking episode.
Yeah. And I don't understand. And like, you know, we could touch on the justice system and the speed at which that moves at some other point. But like, I don't understand how you have all this evidence of like what this guy did, and you still like, you know, all you can do is serve him papers and it gives him time to go home and like do what he wants. I don't get it.
Again, it's a thing of not getting into details that the documentary so clearly doesn't do. They say we can't charge him for the sexual assault because we just don't have enough evidence. And he says, she said, that's how the justice system works. It's fucked up. But at the same time, don't you have evidence of fraud? Don't you have evidence of, like manipulation and control? Can't you charge him for anything else? Like, yes, Al Capone was a horrible murdering gangster. They got him on tax evasion. There's got to be something about this cult leader that you can get him on for, like, tax evasion, the equivalent of that. So, like,
he's got to have unpaid parking tickets.
And something?
To get this guy off the street. And you catch him at, like, you know, Thursday evening dinner at the local, you know, Chinese spot with, like, you know, a bunch of, I guess, thugs or whatever.
I think it was his family.
His own kids apparently left him at the end. Like, his son, I guess, stopped talking to him. The daughter was then gone at the end. But I don't know, because we got, like, 5 minutes each of them.
Yeah,
but, like,
not enough to make that interesting. And, okay, so wouldn't that have been compelling, hearing from those two?
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, his second in command is his son, and, like, you know, like, the person that he trusts with everything. And then they just kind of breeze over. And then he stopped talking to his father, and we haven't been able to reach him. Like, wait, what?
Like, why?
Find that guy. Find that guy.
And if you can't, like, get that for the documentary, postpone the documentary.
Right? Like, you had more here, and you had... But I don't know. Like, just get this asshole off the street, man. You're giving this. If he's preying on people the way that it clearly looks like he is, why is it so hard to do the right thing? You know, I don't know.
Anyway, it's depressing. The whole justice system is depressing.
It is. But yeah. at least we'll see if we get justice for Dylan, because I don't know if the ball hairs are different, the mushroom head's different.
Justice for Dylan.
Dylan has a compelling argument. It's a lot. There's a lot of questions in that 32-minute window. Is all I'm saying.
Oh my god.
I want to know what Emily, Randall, and Ming have to say. Like, give me more.
This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, putting together our TikTok cult dance crew. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
And I'm just going to go erase some evidence off of camera. I'll be back in a little bit. You better make the rules out.
Make sure to erase the ball hairs, man. We will see you all next time.